Well, some of you might remember about 10 years ago, I had an opportunity to talk with a fellow by the name of Ralph Sarchi. He wrote a book, Deliver Us From Evil, with Lisa Collier Cool, a New York City cop who investigates the supernatural. Well, now it's a movie.
As a cop, I've seen some horrible things. But nothing that can't be explained by human nature.
Then you haven't seen for evil.
Hi, Daddy. I'm going to sleep now. First, I want to tell you that I love you and I miss you.
Be safe tonight.
A possible 1025 at the Bronx Zoo. Perps potentially still at the scene.
Hey, Sergeant Sarchi, right?
What's the damage here?
Weirdest thing. The whole zoo lost power. This woman flipped out.
She split against the crowd. Now we can't find her.
She must be hiding somewhere in the park.
Ma'am, what's wrong with you? You know this lady?
She's one of my charges. I'm a Jesuit priest. I believe Jane's problem to be spiritual.
You think she's possessed? I'm sorry, Padre.
She's gone the lonely bin where she belongs.
My husband Jimmy sometimes has these fits where he claws at things.
Well, the trailer scares the living daylights out of you. I'm sure the movie will, too. We'll be back with Ralph Sarchi in just a moment. Deliver Us From Evil on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're going to try not to scare the living daylights out of you over the next 3 hours, but stand by. Ralph Sarchi, of course, is a retired New York police veteran. He had worked out of the 46th Precinct in New York's South Bronx. His other job, though, his work, investigating cases of demonic possession and assisting in the exorcisms of humanity's most ancient and most dangerous foes, wrote a book with Lisa Collier Cool called Deliver Us From Evil, turned into a movie also known as, of course, Beware the Night. And Ralph, I can't believe it's been 10 years. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, George. How are you?
Good. I'm looking forward to this. And let's review a little bit about how this all happened for you. What the heck happened?
I don't even contemplate it. It was a journey. It took a lot of years, as you know, but, here we are. It was incredible.
When this was going on for you back many, many years ago, you made a concerted effort to almost devote your entire career, and you have now, to investigating all of these strange occurrences. Are you glad that you did it at this point?
Pretty much. I have no regrets. You know, I've met a lot of good people over the years and experienced a lot of good things along with the bad. So, you know, that's how I look at life. It's a journey, and yeah, I don't have any regrets about it.
Tell us a little bit about Deliver Us From Evil, turned into a movie, Beware the Night. How did that all come about for you?
Well, back in 2003, I had Scott Derrickson and Paul Boardman come over to my house from L.A. to write the screenplay to what was Beware the Night at the time. And, I developed a friendship with Scott over the years because of that. And I got a text message from him one day. I'm sorry, an email. And I didn't even understand what was written in the email. I had thought he had sent it to me by an error. So I sent him a return email. And I said, Scott, I think you sent the wrong email. You're talking about some kind of a movie or something. And he says, no, I got the right guy. And he told me that Sony had decided to negotiate with Disney and Jerry Bruckheimer to get Beware the Night to them so they can actually make it. And, it was sort of a shock. And then it took like a year from that point on for them to negotiate. So I had told Scott, I says, yeah, when they sign on the dotted line, give me a call. You know, I know how Hollywood works. They,
sure.
They're slow and they, you know, they tell you this and they tell you that. So, and it, you know, it wound up happening, and it was pretty surprising from what I know.
And
how Hollywood
and of
works.
Course, Ralph, you know, they get a screenplay writer or two, and they look at your book, they read your book, and then they start writing and changing. Were you happy with the outcome? Did they illustrate in the film what you did in the book?
Well, I think the film was very much fictionalized. The book is a compilation of different cases that I've handled through the years. And, you know, from the discussions I've had with Scott, that doesn't make for a good motion picture. That you need to have some kind of a cohesive story. You have to have this arc that they talk about, you know, getting a character from one place to another. And he couldn't do that with, a book that's pretty much all over the place. What he did was he took elements of the book and elements of my life, and he just developed the story. Now, you're right. There were a whole lot of other screenwriters on this over the years. And from what I understand, when they decided to make it, Scott Derrickson took it back, and, you know, him and Paul Boardman, they did a rewrite on it a few times and made it, you know, to what it came out to be.
Well, just the trailer that I played, Ralph, scares the living daylights out of you, doesn't it?
Well, you know, the idea that we were going with, actually, is that this is not a horror movie. And somebody actually had gotten shirts made up that said it's not a horror movie, but it's scary. Scott wasn't going for the scary aspect of the movie, although I think he did a pretty good job doing it.
Yeah.
He was going more for the message. You know, the message is that that basically this, you know, the book and this field itself gives us. And I think he did a good job with that because I could see them. I could see those messages in there.
You have started the book, of course, Deliver Us From Evil, with what you call the Halloween horror. Tell us about that. What happened?
Well, that particular case, really nice family. My partner Joe at the time received a call from an exorcist from another state other than New York, because New York didn't have exorcists at that time. They just had one priest dealing with this stuff. And the priest in New York happened to know about the this exorcist, and he reached out to him, and he reached out to Joe and I because it was in our neck of the woods, and he asked us to go in and do an initial, investigation. So that's what we did, and it wound up probably being one of my most profound and serious cases that I've ever dealt with, and we didn't even know it at the time. This poor family, it started out pretty much as demonic spirit masking itself or mimicking itself as a human being, as somebody who was alive at one time and had passed away. And it wove a story. Focused on one person, which is what we call the focal person. That's the person that the demon singled out for the possession that it eventually wants to get to, or a suicide, either one. It doesn't matter to a demon.
Yeah, you're right.
And this sort of conned its way into the family through, manifestations and what we call interior locutions, where this thing was actually telepathically speaking to this woman. And in the meantime, as it progresses, it started to actually physically assault one of her children. simultaneously, while it was trying to make this lady feel that it was helpful, it was actually the cause of the attacks, to break down this woman's will so it can actually possess her. And I have always said one of the best ways to break down a person's will is by brutalizing their child. You know, there's nothing that they could do about it. It just happened. And it continually happened to this girl for about 3 months until they reached out to the church. And, you know, we were able to go in there and eventually help them out. And it was successful, by the way. They're not all successful, but this one was.
Did you get assigned it when you were on the police force because they knew of your interests? How did, was it just like the bad draw and off you had to go?
Well, no, I believe that this didn't have anything to do with the NYPD. You know, being a cop just so happened to be what I did for a living, you know, and then I was involved in this in this work, in this field. And they were really pretty separate. But they collided every once in a while. I might run into somebody while I'm at work that has a problem, you know, and I find out about it, actually. I've handled a few cases over the years for fellow cops. And I continually hear from police officers throughout the world throughout the United States. You know, it's telling me if they have problems. Some of them are minor, and I try to help them without actually going to the house. But in the movie, it seemed like being a cop and doing this work went hand in hand, when in fact it really wasn't like that in reality. But it makes a good movie, I think.
Well, it is. And I think, you know, just based on what I've seen, they've done a great job doing that. And are you continuing, Ralph, to do what you do, and that is, of course, investigate these demonic possession cases and things like that?
Oh, yeah, I'm still in the field. I did retire from it for a while, and I think that the way it works with God is that he isn't done with me yet. So, you know, obviously when this movie, you know, was going to come about, I knew that it was going to put me back into the field. So, you know, I just accepted it and dusted myself off and got back into the fight. So, you know, that's where I am right now.
Well, you keep plugging along. Now, let's talk about some of the things that you've been doing with this. When you got into it and got into it in a big, big way, the region that you're from, the New York area, was that... did that have any particular hauntings or demonic forces that other areas might not have had?
No, I wouldn't say that New York, you know, holds anything special in that, you know, in that vicinity. There are a lot of people here, just like there are in, you know, most of your major cities. So I wouldn't single New York out as, you know, special, but the way I look at it is, you know, this book came out in October 2001. And in that time frame, you know, the terrorists thought New York was pretty special at the time. So, you know, I guess in reality, New York might figure into, you know, this whole mess. I don't know yet. I'm looking into it, though.
You talked about what you call three stages of diabolical activity. Ralph, what is that?
Well, the three stages, number one, you need an invitation. Somewhere along the line, a demonic spirit must be invited in to our plane of existence. So that's really the first stage. But the problem is that sometimes a lot of people who are affected by the demonic did nothing of the sort. They're innocent victims. You know, they might move into the wrong house. They might move or buy a plot of land. That's the wrong land. But the first stage that we look at is what we call an infestation, where, you know, the demonic, they're now going to let you know that they're present by doing small little things. It's usually very subtle. things might move around. You might hear scratching noises. You might hear tapping noises. You might hear breathing in your ear. You might hear your name called, mm-hmm. When you're alone. There's a whole array of different little phenomena that you bring about. And that sort of, you look at it, you notice it, but at that point, it's just so subtle that you're not sure. And then we progress into the oppression-obsession stage, which is it's a two-pronged type of attack. The oppression stage is now the infestation multiplied by 1,000. You now know there's something wrong in your home. And, those little tapping noises are now pounding noises. Instead of hearing a whisper or breathing, now you get your hair pulled or you get pinched or you get scratched. You get pushed. Some people get punched, slapped, they get kicked. They could be sitting in a chair. They'll be dragged out of the chair. They could be in bed. They'll be dragged out of the bed. Covers will be thrown off. I'm hearing a lot of phenomena now about people getting pressed down into the bed, their legs, their chest area. They can't move. It's not sleep paralysis because a lot of these people are in bed and they are awake when this happens. So, then the obsession stage is the internal part of this attack. Not only are things happening externally, now things are going on inside the focal person. The obsession stage is where the person starts to lean more towards sinful behavior. Mm-hmm. Could be in the sexual area, could be drugs, it could be alcohol.
Anything, yeah.
Yeah, anything negative, that's what these things do. That's what they bring. That's what they thrive on. And this is all done with leading up to the possession stage where the person can no longer resist the demon possessing them. And we can have a transient possession taking place at this particular point where the demon will only possess the person for a short period of time, and then they back off. And eventually, they break down that will where that person can't resist and push that out anymore, and they fully take over a person's body. It's not 24 hours a day. There is some normalcy in a person's life, but there's something wrong, and they know it. A lot of times, they don't understand it, and it takes time for them to actually seek the right help if they do that at all.
All right, Ralph, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come right back and talk with Ralph Sarchi, the retired New York police officer. His book, Deliver Us from Evil, again, turned into a major motion picture to scare the living daylights out of you. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. Ralph Sarchi with us as we talk about his work, Deliver Us from Evil. And of course, it was also called Beware the Night. Both great topics and titles, Ralph.
Oh, well, they sort of stole my title from me. Hollywood stole a lot from me.
They did. Yeah. Did your religious background help or hinder you in your investigations?
Oh, no, that was a help. If I didn't have the religious background, I would have no business being involved in this stuff. That's the number one thing I tell people. They feel they want to get involved in this work. And I tell them, the first thing you need to do is build a relationship with God. You cannot, these spirits, the only thing that you can use against them is the name of Jesus. And the Blessed Mother actually is another powerful name against the demonic. They don't like her. To go up against, first of all, I don't see how anybody who doesn't have religion or faith would even want to believe in something like that. I wouldn't. If I didn't believe in God, I certainly wouldn't want to believe in devils. I mean, where's the hope there?
That's true. But when you were doing what you do, you are convinced that the devil is part of this, aren't you?
I'm 150% aware, and there is no doubt in my mind where this comes from. Why would I do it if I doubted it?
Right. Is it, you know, is it, do you need a priest with you to eradicate these demons, these evil spirits?
Well, that depends. If this is a possession case, you know, where a person is possessed, then yes, you need a clergyman. Only clergymen are, you know, authorized to exorcise a person according to the Catholic faith. I am not an exorcist. I don't like to be referred to as an exorcist. The only time that I'll actually go up against the demonic spirit in that sense is in a home where I have the authority of Jesus to actually exorcise the home. But as far as people are concerned, I don't do that. I do have to do a religious provocation on people who, you know, I might suspect of being possessed, meaning I have to try to bring that demon forward so I know what I'm dealing with. So I know I'm not dealing with a mental illness and I'm actually dealing with a possession. It's hard to tell sometimes.
It is hard to tell. And what do you think the percents are, Ralph, with that mental illness compared to a real demonic possession or episode?
I couldn't even approach putting a percentage on that. I do know that Bishop McKenna feels that most of your mental illness cases are demonic related to a certain degree. You know, we're still learning a lot of things about the brain and human and being human. You know, and we're still learning about the nature of demonic spirits and angelic spirits. You know, that's why I got so lucky. I have a clinical psychologist that works with me now. Renee, how are you? She's out there.
She's out there listening.
She's, you know, I've been praying to God for a long time to send me somebody in the mental health field that's open enough and has the passion and the guts enough to actually look into this. And he finally did. And, you know, she's been invaluable to me with, you know, helping me with the mental illness aspect. I took psychology 101 in college, and I got an F. I didn't pass that class. So, you know, I'm cheating. She's helping me out.
A little assistance will help.
Yeah, help me with this, you know. And so it is difficult, but a lot of times I'm able to bring that demon out, and then there's no doubt.
Well, and what you don't know, too, Ralph, is whether the demonic possession creates that mental illness, you know, feeling, or what's happening to the individual. I would guess it's pretty dangerous for them, isn't it?
I agree with you 100%. That's what I've been saying. We'll never know if demonic spirits actually bring about mental illness. But I could tell you that most people who come in contact with, a possession where they are possessed, they really have difficulties throughout life from that point on. They're never the same, and I never really say that in public, but that's the reality of the situation. People, when they are touched by the demonic in a profound way, meaning a possession case or a very serious case, you know, of infestation or oppression, there's always that feeling that they have. It never goes away. From speaking to people that have had these problems over the years, that's pretty consistent. Something changes for them as far as life is concerned. And I can pretty much understand what they mean.
As a police officer, Ralph, you have seen pure evil out there on the streets. The question is, what makes the pure evil? I mean, is that an individual who was just, you know, raised in a poor way as a kid and he turned out to be horrible when he grew up as an adult? Or are these folks possessed to the point where there's some other influence and maybe they don't even know what they're doing?
Well, that's a great question, and it's something that I feel we might never get the answer to. I'm working on that right now, is where does this come from? Where does where do people, you know, get to the point where they can do the things that they do? I don't know if we're ever going to be able to answer that question in our limited capacity to understand things. But, you know, look at where we were, you know, centuries ago compared to what we know now. Will we have those answers? I don't know. But, you know, we're trying. We're looking into it. I know I am.
I mean, how many times as an officer did you stop somebody for something and you walked away going, boy, that person's really a demon or possessed or something? I'm sure you thought about that.
Actually, George, no. I never approached it from that point of view. I approach these cases from a skeptical point of view. I don't approach a case. Well, that's not true. Sometimes I'll speak to somebody or I'll hear something and I'll say, well, wait a minute, you know, there's something here. I get a feeling that, you know, this case is not baloney. It's real. But for the most part, I will approach a case as a skeptic. They have to prove it to me. It's not like I'm going to pick up the phone and call you and believe you right off the bat. You need to convince me that you are having a genuine problem. So, you know, that's my mindset when I investigate a case. I'm not so quick to believe people. You got to hear some of the stuff that they're telling me.
Oh, my God.
It's like, wow, what? Huh? You know, why you? That's usually my first question. Why you? You know, that's how I get into people's heads with that question.
When they're possessed, Ralph, do they bounce in and out of being possessed where they're back to their normal state, then they get possessed and they act weird, then they're back normal again, or is it constant?
No, that's pretty much the case where they'll go through periods of normalcy. It could be, you know, it could be days, it could be a few weeks, it could be months. Some guys even go through years where they'll have an episode and it'll stop for years and then it'll come back. And then for some reason, it just becomes persistent. And then, you know, then now they're looking at it, just saying, you know, what is this? But there's so many different things. Some people, they claim that they lose track of time. They lose track of, they black out, actually. That's the word they use. I black out. And I always want to know for how long. You know, the period of time is telling and the frequency. You know, there's no time frame in the spirit world, so they don't operate the way we operate with the concept of time. So it sometimes it's very hard to really pinpoint a lot of the stuff. Some of the stages of demonic activity can be skipped. They can go right to oppression or right to an obsession. I've had cases where it went right to possession. We don't know why. It just happens, and so we have to take each case as it comes to us, and we have to figure out or try to figure out what's going on.
When they're possessed and they bounce back again, do they ever say, I'm missing time, something's weird? I mean, where are they when they're possessed, Ralph? I mean, where's that person?
Well, you know, sometimes people who are possessed, their soul will be suppressed, meaning they won't know what their physical body is doing. A lot of times, you know, it's not understood. Some people feel that the soul is actually pushed out of the body, you know, into the astral projection plane, which is what we do when we sleep. When we hit REM sleep, the soul actually does leave the body. It's still connected through the urethral cord, so death does not come to the body. But that's the most vulnerable point for a human being because the body is basically empty. It's left unattended. That spiritual protection, which is your soul, is now outside the body. That's when a lot of your sorcerers who mess around with the occult do their spells around that time. It's easiest to affect somebody. So it's pretty much consistent with a possession. And then we have some people who actually are conscious. They know what's happening. They see what's happening, but they say they're powerless to do anything about it. They do not control their body any longer. And they're horrified a lot of times at their behavior, and they don't understand what's going on.
Well, when that soul is outside of the body, when the demon has taken over, basically, what gets the soul back in? I mean, how do you do that?
Well, look, the soul is connected to the body through the erythral cord.
Right.
That's where it belongs. So it's going to go back into the body.
It severs
the body
that, severs that
survive,
death, doesn't it?
I'm sorry.
It severs that death?
That erythral cord is severed, and that the soul can no longer re-enter the body. The only way the soul can re-enter the body is if God puts it back in there. Other than that, the body is finished. There is no connection to it whatsoever at this point. It decomposes, and it turns to dust, and it's gone. What remains is that soul. And if you haven't done anything to make sure your soul is where it should be in life, then you're going to lose it. You're not going to have it anymore. You're not going to have God. You're going to be finished. And there's no do-overs at that point. Soul is very important to us. In fact, it is our most prized possession.
Do you get calls from people, Ralph, who say, you know, my brother, he's possessed. I need some help. I need some help now. Do people call in like that?
Yeah, I get that. I get a lot of calls from family members, and a lot of times I'll just direct them. It sounds like mental illness to me.
Yeah.
You know, I'll direct them to get a mental health professional to get involved. And one of the biggest indicators that I found is when people are suffering from mental illness and they're on medication, if that medication works, then, you know, you're not possessed because demons are not subject to our medication. They're not physical beings. They're spiritual. Our physical laws here on this earth do not apply to them, and that includes any kind of medication that you might put in your body. So if it's helping you, then, you know, I would be safe to say that you're suffering from a mental illness and not demonic activity.
Unbelievable how this happens. Are you finding common denominators, similarities among people who are possessed?
No, actually, there are none. Father Malachi Martin had done a study on this, and he found not one single strand that connects everybody in the same manner. Everybody is different. It knows no boundaries as far as culture, religion, race, whatever it is. There is nothing that binds them except for God.
That's the common denominator.
That's it. God is the common denominator. That's the only thing. Well, a lot of people that are possessed don't have God in their life. But, you know, they're pretty much they're going to get them at that point because there's no other way to look at it.
I was going to ask you, Ruff, do you find that most people who are possessed, that they had a lack of spirituality in their life prior to that?
Well, it's dangerous to go through life with a lack of spirituality and a lack of faith, but that's not actually, you know, a reason. There are many people who are very religious. Look at Annalise Michel. Scott Derrickson made the movie The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Annalise Michel was a very religious girl. She got possessed.
Yeah.
Like Scott said, there's no way to actually look at that case comfortably. There's no reason for her to have been possessed. It happened. God allowed it to happen because he wanted people to know of the reality of the devil. And he'll allow things to happen to people because he is either calling them or he wants to wake them up to something. They don't operate without God's authority. They can't. They can't possibly do it. So if they are, then God's allowing it. And you should be looking into the reason why at that point.
What are some of the things, Ralph, people do to let their guard down to get possessed? I mean, I've heard if they're intoxicated, that could be an opening. If you play with a Ouija board, that could be an opening. Have you seen anything there?
Well, is the possibility there that when you consume too much alcohol, yes, it's almost like when your soul leaves the body. When you consume too much alcohol, you no longer have control over pretty much anything in your physical realm, and you always run the risk. I wouldn't go that far as to say, well, you know, if you go out and you get inebriated tonight, you're going to get possessed, because I've never heard of it. I never heard anybody say to me, hey, I went to the local pub and I drank too much and I woke up possessed. So, you know, is it possible? Anything is possible in this field, but it's highly unlikely. It's more, if you have a habit of sin, habitual sin is a draw. There are a lot of different things that'll draw the demonic to you. But as far as a wham, bam, thank you, man possession, it's very rare. But not out of the realm of the possibility.
Truly remarkable how this is happening to people. Are there some people, Ralph, that just never come back? They just stay possessed?
Well, those we would consider a perfectly possessed, you know, where they actually have made a pact with the devil and they accept it for whatever reasons, money, power, whatever it is. I don't know if they realize the concept of all eternity, but hey, whatever. If they want to, look into selling their soul for about 50, 60, 70 years of power and money compared to an eternity of suffering, yeah. And I don't really look at that person as being like normal, but normal isn't something that I really deal in anyway.
All right, Ralph, we're going to talk more about your work when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.